You are listening to audio from Riverside Church. If you would like to check out more resources, please visit riverside.church.
Good morning. Welcome to Riverside. My name's Keith. I'm one of the leaders around our church. And this Easter morning, we're continuing on in our sermon series, which we've been going through the book of Exodus together. We're going through Exodus verse by verse very slowly this year so we can kind of see what God has for us in that book of the Bible. But this morning, we're going to take a step back and kind of look at some big picture things in the scriptures as well as in Exodus and talk really about two different things. A little bit about hope and a little bit about what can happen over a period of 3 days. You see, 3 days, that time period of 3 days gets mentioned a couple different times in the book of Exodus, as well as hope is one of the major themes that runs throughout all of Exodus. So we're going to talk about each of those this morning. Now, Exodus, in case you don't know, if you haven't been here lately, is the account of God's people who are trapped in an oppressive and generational slavery system in the foreign land of Egypt. And as you can imagine, if your family's been in slavery for generations, right, that would feel pretty hopeless, right? If your entire people group had been oppressed for hundreds of years, you wouldn't have a lot of hope things are going to get better. But thankfully, we have a God that speaks into seemingly hopeless situations, but there's this sense that God's timing is not always like our timing. Have you ever noticed that? You get the sense that God's timing is not always like our timing. And there's this thing about God in the scriptures. Sometimes he brings about hope after a waiting of 3 days, a period of 3 days. Now, this is not a biblical promise. So this is a biblical pattern, but not a biblical promise. But it is an interesting pattern nonetheless. For example, in the Old Testament book of Genesis, Joseph, he's in prison in Egypt. This is the first part of the story about how God's people came to be in Egypt. And as Joseph is in Egypt in prison, another prisoner comes with this dream. It's a confusing dream. What does this really mean? And Joseph gives some insight into the dream. Insight that does bring some hope. And Joseph says, within 3 days, I know you're hopeless right now, but within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position. In other words, I know you're in prison, things look bleak, but take heart, in 3 days, restoration is coming. Now, there was another dream where in 3 days, judgment's coming, but we're going to focus on that one here. Hundreds of years later, years filled with hopelessness and oppression, God sends another messenger, a guy named Moses. And Moses goes to Pharaoh and requests of Pharaoh multiple times, let us take a 3-day journey to the wilderness. We got to go for 3 days in the wilderness to offer sacrifices to our Lord and our God. Moses says to Pharaoh, it's going to take us 3 days. Pharaoh says no, but God's an engaged God. God does not take no for an answer. So God kind of to push the issue, to kind of press the issue, God brings, we've seen this in our series so far, he brings what's called the 10 plagues, right? One of these plagues was total darkness. Guess how long total darkness lasted? 3 days, yeah. And usually the answer is Jesus in church, but Jeff's catching on to this already. It's 3 days. spoiler alert, by the way. Next week when Andrew preaches on the Exodus event, spoiler alert, I'm sorry, I'm taking your thunder, Andrew. The people of God are going to get out of Egypt. I know. You weren't expecting that. They get delivered. But then they end up wandering the desert and deserts are hot, right? Deserts are hard places to be. And there's at least one 3-day period where they had zero water. Chapter 15. For 3 days, they traveled in the desert without finding water. That'd feel pretty hopeless, right? Can you imagine yourself going 3 days without water? Imagine being in the wilderness for 3 days. Now, God does a miracle. They get water. But they had to wait these 3 days where they're frattered and they're worried and they're even suffering. And when they're wandering the desert, one of the major themes we're going to see in the book of Exodus is God will now give his law, his commandments, his decrees. But before God does it, before God speaks in a bold, massive way, this is what they're told to do. And the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day. Because on the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. God says, be ready on day 3 because the third day is when God's going to move. Later on, as God's people are about to leave that very desert and cross to the promised land, guess how long they're told to wait? Yes, Jeff, you're getting this. Go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. In 3 days from now, we're leaving this desert and we're going to cross the Jordan and take the promised land that God's giving to us. Again, 3 days is not a biblical promise, but it is an interesting pattern nonetheless, as we see God's people delivered from hopeless situations in Egypt. And by the way, it's elsewhere in the scriptures. 2 Kings chapter 20, a guy named Hezekiah is very, very sick. Things do not look good for Hezekiah. But then through a move of God, he's healed. But that move comes intentionally on the third day. One of my favorite books of the Bible, an amazing woman named Esther, is about to stand up to a tyrannical leader. She's about to put her life on the line. She's an amazing woman of God. But before she does it, she tells the people this, fast for me, don't eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I'll go to the king, even though it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish. An amazing woman of God puts her neck on the line in a seemingly hopeless situation. But before she does that, she says, 3 days. 3 days, it's going to take us some time. Nehemiah is charged to build a massive rebuilding process before he starts. He says this, I wait in Jerusalem. After staying there for 3 days, I set out with a few others to look at the wall. The prophet Hosea will later say this, come, let us return to the Lord. He's torn us to pieces. That sounds bad, right? That's pretty hopeless. But he will heal us. He has injured us. That doesn't sound that fun. But he will bind up our wounds. After 2 days, he'll revive us. On the third day, he will restore us that we may live in his presence. Starting to see there's a lot of Old Testament examples of this three-day period. But let me give you just one more. How many days do you think Jonah was in the belly of a large fish, which would be terrible, would be stinky, would be pretty demoralizing, disgusting, and feel pretty hopeless? Just for fun, how many days do you think Jonah was in the belly of the large fish? Yes, you're tracking, Sean. This is really, really good. Preacher's doing a great job. You see, there's this pattern in the scriptures of 3 days, and 3 days takes on a broader meaning in the Bible of waiting for deliverance, waiting in hope, and waiting when things don't look good. You know, right now things don't look great, but there's more than meets the eye. There's more to the story. Now, I know some of you are sitting there right now, and you kind of know where I'm going with this, right? You kind of know what preacher's setting up, right? It's Easter Sunday, so you have a pretty good idea of where I'm probably going to take this sermon, right? You have an idea where the pastors are going to go on this one. So you're probably sitting there thinking, okay, Keith, this can be a real short sermon. Why don't you just wrap it up, go to Jesus, 3 days in the grave thing, and on the third day, just go to that part so we can get to Easter brunch, right? Think about that. Is that what you're hoping for? I know you are. If you're thinking that, you're right, by the way. I mean, I am going to go there. But before we do, I mean, really reflect upon, I want to challenge you, where is your hope? How is your hope level right now? Maybe some of you are very hopeful right now. You're hopeful the job will come through. You're hopeful that apartment you're looking at is going to actually work out and you're going to get it. You're hopeful that that wedding day on the calendar is going to really come about and be a wonderful thing. It's a great thing to have that kind of hope. But others of us, this morning, we would use hope in a very different way. I hope they call today. Probably won't, though. I hope she turns a corner and gets better, but things don't look that great according to the doctors. I hope I can get all the rent money together before the first of the month, but things are getting really, really tight. I hope it's not cancer, but if it's not, it's probably going to be something else. I hope I stop feeling this down, this depression, but it's been so long for now. The reality is we've all had those experiences, right? We're stuff that we've hoped for and longed for don't seem to be coming true. And the reality is, in a world like ours, everything eventually wears out, right? And there's always going to be an evil person with an army or with a knife creating havoc. And if we're honest, we just all know everything. Every one of us is going to end up wearing out, falling apart, breaking up, and ending 6 feet in the ground, right? And now some of you are thinking, dude, you just got dark, Keith. It's Easter, man. Can we go to the three-day Jesus thing soon? In the midst of a world filled with loneliness, heartbreak, depression, longing, and despair, oppression, in the midst of a world that was pretty hopeless, right? The God of the universe, 2,000 years ago, stood up and said, it's time. And he came down to earth to restore humanity, to restore relationships, and to bring hope. In the process, Jesus interacts with people on the margins, and he restores their hope. Jesus interacts with religious outcasts in a way that instilled hope in them, that they had still had a place for within God's heart. Jesus healed people with debilitating diseases and who had all but given up hope, right? He went to the people who had very little hope, and he loved them, and he cared for them, and he restored them. But he's also a pretty misunderstood kind of guy, especially misunderstood by religious leaders, people like me, and misunderstood by powerful people, or maybe understood is what ticked them off, either way you want to look at it. In the end, the people with power, religious power and political power, they end up arresting him on false charges. They beat him, they whip him, and eventually they hung him on a tree to die. And that's the first day, right? It's the first day. And the first day is pretty hopeless. And for his followers, the hopelessness they had felt before Christ comes flooding back. And if you look at day one in the scriptures, it's dark and his friends are crushed and their hope seems to be gone. On the second day, the political leaders and religious leaders, they're pretty happy with themselves. On day two, the worldly powers are pretty happy with themselves. And to keep power in place, they have his tomb guarded. Just to be sure no one takes his body. So the religious powers and political powers continue to exert their dominance on the second day. But of course, as we've now seen through the book of Exodus, as well as in the broader scriptures, right? God is a three-day God. Sometimes things look dark on day one. Day two can drag on and drag on and drag on, and dreams kind of get laid to rest. But thankfully, we have a three-day God, right? In chapter 19, God says big things are going to come on the third day. It's on the third day that God's people cross the Jordan River and get to the promised land. It's on day three that Esther responds in a mighty way. It's on day three Hosea's hope is restored. It's on day three that Jonah's resurrected from the tomb. I mean, the big fish, right? By the way, it was the third day of no food that the people around Jesus experienced a miracle where the bread gets multiplied and the fish gets multiplied. It's on the third day that miracle happens, by the way, just a little side note. It's on the third day that the God of the universe rolls away the stone from the tomb. It's the third day that he defeated our greatest foe, which is death. It's on the third day Christ came back to life. And from the third day on, things have never been the same, right? Never been the same. And so Riverside, we are a third day kind of people. We sometimes experience day ones, and we certainly experience long day twos, but we are a third day kind of people because we believe that resurrected Jesus is still doing this kind of stuff. He's still setting oppressed people free. He's still the God of resurrection, restoring hope into people who've lost hope. People who feel trapped, people who feel discarded, people who feel depressed, people who feel lost, people who are hurting. I just know for some of you, feel like it's the first day. Things have just smacked you across the face and just life has changed on a dime. It just feels really hard. It might even feel like death. And for you, Jesus knows what that feels like. He knows what it feels like. Others of us, it might feel like day two, just dragging along. Things never seem to turn the corner. Plans are shattered. And for all of us, wherever you are this morning, today is a day where we fix our eyes on the empty tomb of Jesus, the God of the third day, who defeats death and is still doing this kind of work. And of course, this question, this paradigm, it does beg the question, where do you put your hope? What are you putting your hope in? Because you can believe Jesus is risen and still put your hope in lesser things, by the way. Did you know that? You can believe and pass a Bible quiz, what day did Jesus raise on? Oh, it was the third day. And have your hope in a completely different place. You can believe it in your head and put your hope in a different circumstance, so not put your hope in the God of the resurrection. Put your hope in some other kind of financial breakthrough, maybe. And if that's the case, you're still going to be massively disappointed. Some people put their own hopes in their own strength or their own moral goodness, but none of that holds a candle when life is fading, when the reality of our shortcomings and our weaknesses settle in. So Riversiders, where is your hope this morning? I mean, really, it's rhetorical. I mean, don't answer out loud right now, but like, where is your hope? What are you hoping for right now? Because in Exodus, God's people pinned their hope on God. They had to wait. By the end, it was worth it. Jesus' disciples, they're pretty shaky until day three. But in the end, meeting resurrected Jesus changes everything. And friends, I'm telling you, still today, people are meeting this risen, reigning Jesus. Having hope restored. Hope restored. Having life restored. It's not always easy. Sometimes it still involves waiting, by the way. It still does. It still involves struggle sometimes. But the third day, God is still alive and active and inviting people into new life and new relationship with Him. And that's what we're celebrating this morning. So we've waited for the season of Lent. So this time, this morning, let's worship and celebrate our risen, reigning King, who shows up, who's alive, who restores hope, who meets hurting people. So this time, our wonderful musicians are going to come back up and lead us in some songs. Pastor Andrew's going to come up and lead us in communion. And if you need prayer for anything, if you are like, okay, that sounds nice, Keith, but I don't know if you understand how hopeless I feel right now, I'd love to pray with you. I'll be in the back by the sign that says prayer. If you need prayer for anything in the next little bit, come and get prayed for by myself or one of our leaders, okay? With that said, Andrew's going to lead us in communion now.
We've established today is Easter Sunday. 3 full days ago in the story, Jesus and his disciples gathered for a meal. They gathered for a Passover feast in an upper room. And without today, it would have just been the Last Supper of some guy who claimed to be Messiah, right? It would have been the last meal that he shared with his disciples. It would have been sad. He might have said some things that seemed a little heretical. But without today, it would have just been a meal. Just consider what he said. On the night Jesus was betrayed, he took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it. And he said, "This is my body, which is for you." This is a full day before Jesus was crucified. But he's explaining to them, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And then he took the cup after supper and he said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood." And if you were one of the 12 disciples sitting around that table, you're like, "What? We're here for a Passover feast. What do you mean in your blood?" Drink of it in remembrance of me. Without the resurrection, without Easter, that meal would have come and gone and the words probably forgotten. But that wasn't the end, was it? Because Christ is risen. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. That's what we're celebrating at the table, that Christ is risen, that his body was broken for us, and that his body, his blood, his life can give us life, right? His life is our hope. The fact that death could not hold him down means that death also will not hold us down. So when we come to the table, which you are invited to do as we sing some songs in a moment, you take the bread, which is in the lid, if you haven't used these before, in remembrance of Jesus. And you drink the cup in remembrance of Jesus. We take it as one body because it unites us in one body under Christ, who is our head. He is the one who makes us one. He is the one who gives us hope. He is the one who gives us life. It's a new covenant of salvation, of forgiveness, of healing. So my sisters and brothers, as we sing, you can come forward at any point, or you can go. There's also trays in the back on either side of the sound cart. And then when you're ready, you're more than welcome to share the wafer and the cup. You can do it as a family. You can do it with whoever you came with. You can do it by yourself. You can do it with your home group. You can do it with a complete stranger next to you, however you'd like to. But these are the gifts of God for the people of God. Truly, the gifts of God for the people of God that make us one, the signs of our salvation. So my sisters and brothers, take and eat the body of Christ broken for you and the blood of Christ shed for you.
Thank you for listening to Riverside Church. For more resources, visit riverside.church.